It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
A bone to pick for you, and I'm not jumping any sharks, but we mentioned your doctor visit. I think the cliffhanger of all cliffhangers. There was no alcohol.
There was no telling people. So I probably got 100 emails since that last podcast. Yes, let's, you know.
Are you going to live?
Well.
Forever.
That is in God's hands.
Forever. That's the truth.
Yeah, not in this body, however.
No, but forever.
But they didn't find the big stuff. They were looking for tumors and strokes and things like that. They didn't find the big stuff. So
good.
They're thinking now some of the symptoms have fought. One, there was a reaction to some supplements I was taking. Which was
we did mention that.
I think we did mention that. But the other part they concluded now is I've got some kind of migraine thing going on, which I know people hear that and go, you're having these excruciating headaches. And what's confusing is, no, I'm not. I'm having a weird sensation in my head that doesn't rise to the level of pain, but is caused me some concern. And what he says is, no, that's pain. It's just not the grandiopaino that you may get some.
Grandiopaino?
He said you may. He didn't talk that way.
Is that a doctor term? I thought they used Latin.
He's Espanol. No, he didn't use that term. I use that term.
Grandiopaino.
But anyway, so
you're going to live.
We're trying some medication. It's supposed to deal with it, but none of the big stuff. So
none of the big stuff.
Sarah's happy.
Don't sweat the big stuff.
See, but I think of death as getting to the front of the Space Mountain line, so I'm a little disappointed. It could have been something big. No, I'm kidding. People are going to write me going, you're not healthy, and I'm probably not. That's probably true. I got a book I want you to read.
Okay, add it to my list.
If you will. Well, I think we want to discuss it here. I did a blog on it last week. It's written by a friend of mine. Someone we interviewed, actually I interviewed, brought back the interview a while back, a Scottish guy.
Okay.
Who lives in England, named Stan Firth, wrote a book called Custom and Command, which is Sunday morning a requirement, or was it just a custom that we developed in Christianity? Good book. People have loved it. He's written a new book. And it's called, the title's crazy. I hesitate to use the title, but otherwise you can't find it.
Because that's true.
The title turns me off, but it doesn't turn off everybody. The title is The Remarkable Replacement Army.
The Remarkable Replacement Army.
Yeah, and I'll send you a copy. Free PDF. You can go to my blog, lifestream.org, download it, and you can take a look at the book for free. You can also buy it from lulu.com. The guy's not trying to make money out of it. He just wrote this prophecy. Which I, again, couching as a prophecy.
He started to twitch.
He takes a metaphor from World War II, this army in Norway, when the Nazis were preparing to occupy, the army disappeared. They went back to civilian life. Not because they were afraid of the Nazis, but knew that the army wasn't going to work. And so they became soldiers in the king's army without the uniform, without the structure, just salted in society. And there were ways that they still took orders from the king. There's ways they still resisted the Nazi occupiers. And he's saying that's what he sees going on in, quote-unquote, the church today.
That, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, that to move forward in what God has for us, many have dropped out of the organized way that is identified as church in the culture, not because they've left God or left the king, but they found they could serve him better outside of it than they could serve him inside it with the realities. It's an intriguing read.
I'm one of those.
I want to talk about it on a podcast. I'd love to do a whole podcast on it. I'd love to explore it more. And so folks,
you want me to read it first?
This is a challenge for you, I realize. But otherwise, I could read it to you while we sit here. But that's 300 pages. And what's wonderful about it, I think, not only whether you agree it's a prophecy or not, I think it's a reality. Whether it's an end-time strategy of God or just religion is imploding and people have found themselves outside of it to more effectively live under the pleasure of the king. Whether it's prophecy or reality, it probably doesn't matter. But when he gets into how to live now that you're not a part of that thing, and you're a part of an army that's more informal, more hidden in the world. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. Some of the best stuff I've read on it.
I
had two people in my house the other night who had already started reading it because they read my blog and went and downloaded it. And I'm going, you know what? Let's have a night. Let's get together and crash some heads and hearts on this book because I think it'd be really fun to do. So up the road, The Remarkable Replacement, Army is the Name. Stan Firth is the author. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it. I think that'd be fun.
Awesome.
And we had fun last night. Since I've moved to the Southern California area, I have a lot of friends.
What, from Moore Park?
From the Central Valley of California.
Sorry.
I realize I've moved three times since I've been here. That's another matter.
Oxnard to Moore Park to Newbury Park.
You know, Sarah and I have had a hunger to have a larger conversation with people in this area about this journey. And we've been kind of patiently waiting for God. I mean, we could have organized a meeting a long time ago and a Bible study and gotten people
it's
to come
different
to
than
it.
A conversation.
But we wanted something more real, something more organic. Over the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, I've had two families in this area who I have no connection to at all, or you don't. But they read So You Don't Want Church Anymore, and they've been having issues in their own fellowship. So they called me, wanted to meet for lunch. We did. And I thought, you know, why don't some of us who are having the same questions get together? We just had a bash at our house the other night. We had 12 couples here. I just got a chance. What was fun, none of them knew each other. Sarah and I knew all of them a little, and two, just a little bit. One couple we didn't even know that came, but had said, if you guys ever do anything, we'd like to connect with you guys. All of them, except one couple came from Ventura, one from Simi Valley. The rest of them are all Newbury Park people. They're right in this neighborhood. And we just had a great time. It was funny watching. We want to find real fellowship. We don't want to start a group. We don't want to organize. Everybody's on the same page. No, no, make it. No, 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 no. And finding a way, even we moved from everybody coming and people brought finger snacks. We were standing in the kitchen talking. Then we kind of moved in the other room and sat down. We're all in a circle. And we're going, okay, here's the real tricky part. How do we keep a real conversation going now that we're in a room sitting in a circle? And it was awkward for a while, which was fun. But we found our way into a wonderful conversation, some beginning relationships. I don't know where God's going to go with that, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Awesome.
I'm excited. Met some wonderful people, folks I'm going to have lunch with and dinner with, and see where God takes those relationships.
Very, very good, Mr. Replacement Army.
So if you're in the Thousand Oaks area and you listen to this and you want to find out about that, you can't. It's closed club. Sorry. No,
exactly how you going to do that?
I've got a great article for you.
Come on, bring it on, brother.
This is from the most spiritual magazine I subscribe to.
Oh, the Second Bible, Sports Illustrated.
Sports Illustrated. Football time in America, people, and I don't mean your soccer kind of kick that round ball around. I mean the real oblong pigskin football, kick it through the goalposts kind of thing. It's big right now. We're coming up on the final three games.
The bowl game.
In fact, by the time we hear this, the two teams will be decided, and we're praying it's the Green Bay. Well, hoping it's the Green Bay Packers. I wouldn't pray about such things.
Owner's privilege.
But there was a lengthy article in Sports Illustrated last week, and it's all about what really creates the home field advantage.
Home field advantage.
Because statistically, there's a home field advantage that holds true percentage-wise in every sport for the last 50, 60 years.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if it's soccer, football, basketball, baseball, there is a home field advantage, and it's statistically measured. Doesn't mean you'll win, but it means you have a greater percentage chance of winning. So they're going, why is that true? I love this. What's the crowd? You're at home in your normal surroundings, and they've got a number of statistical things that says, no, it has nothing to do with it. And then, well, it's the home crowd. They're cheering, supporting. People play right in front of the home crowd, blah, blah, blah. Statistically, it doesn't bear out, and I don't have time to go through all those things. Cause I want to get to the one thing they do say that makes the difference.
Cheerleaders.
Man, I didn't see that coming.
Oh, you did.
Wow.
You're looking at Sports Illustrated. Come on.
My mind, there's no
cheerleading
in here. This is a serious theological.
I'm sorry. I'm back in the moment.
This is a serious theological discussion about football. Anyway, it said the reason there's a home field advantage is that the officials favor the home team.
They do?
Yeah. They even do it like there have been some soccer games where the crowd's not even allowed to be there, and there's still a home field advantage to the officials falling with the home team. And here's what they said. They said, first of all, just be clear, there's no evidence that officials are instructed to rule in favor of the home team. And we believe that all of them are really trying to make the best call. And it doesn't, it's not a team thing, because the same officials here favoring the home team might be at the other team's site and favor them the next week.
That's because they have to walk out of the building.
But they say they are not, however, immune to social pressure. And that's where we think the explanation for the home team bias lies. Referees are ultimately human. In test after test, psychologists have found that social influence has a powerful effect on people's behavior and decisions.
And perceptions.
Without them even being aware of it, period. And then I love this sentence. This is the funny sentence in the whole article. Psychologists call this influence conformity.
Oh, big turn there. Wow.
I read
psychologists
that.
call this conformity.
I was expecting some really wonderful Latin term. It's like scientists call the big yellow thing in the sky
the sun.
The sun. And you go, well,
how did they come up with that?
Amazing.
Bubba, check it out.
In this case, umpires aren't consciously favoring the home team. They are doing what they believe is right in trying to make the right call.
According to the
They conform to a larger group's opinion, swayed by thousands of people witnessing the exact same play they did.
How's that work on TV?
They're not hearing it. I remember being an official. I was a football official back in college. It helped me pay for my college education.
You were?
Yeah.
A zebra.
I was.
Oh, I want pictures. I want pictures.
I still have the shirt.
Yeah, oh, awesome. Yeah, whistle.
It looks like it was built made for a three-year-old when I put it on.
Oh, sweet.
It's a little bit. But no, and I remember that when I was reading this article, I remember the feeling. I remember standing on the sideline when you're the official standing on the end zone line and the home team makes a score. And you, the first one to lift up your arms in the touchdown symbol, and the roar of the crowd, it is
a rush.
It's amazing. I don't know if it'd be enough to say, okay, I don't think he quite made it, but I'm going to give it to him anyway. You know, it's not that kind of conscious decision, but there was an absolute rush of making a call. I threw a coach off the field from the visiting team for being obnoxious, and the roar of the crowd was, and I went home feeling like, that was pretty cool. And so I'm thinking, you know what?
Oh, the narcissistness all.
And for being part, this is where this article hit me, because I, you know, football is football. The power of conformity, the power of being in a religious group of people, and the desire, the social pressure, even when you think you're doing the right thing. Case in point, this came to me this week from a gal who's been through a tough time, moved to a new city, got involved with the congregation, and then the congregation, one of the associate pastors came to her and said, you need to start giving me money for the mission project I'm doing. God told me that you had money that you could give me, and this is what you need to do.
Really? Wow.
And she went and told the pastor about it, the head guy.
He said,
this is really inappropriate, blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, it's kind of inappropriate, but you know what? He's your leader. You need to just
do it.
Don't expose him. We're not disciplining him. We're not doing anything. We're just going to let it go. So they finally left the place. And then she was out. I think this is with her granddaughter. But if it's really her daughter, I'm sorry. I didn't know, but I'm not going to give her name anyway. But she said, crazy thing happened today. My Anna was playing with the pastor's daughter today on the playground. And out of nowhere, the little girl says, I'm not allowed to play with you.
What?
I was told to stay away from you. This is at school. I was told to stay away from you. Then she says, but I'm not listening to my parents. I'm going to play with you anyway. You gotta love seven-year-old kids. I don't care. She said, I was so upset. The kids are so young, six and seven. I'm not sure what to do. It's been a tough day all around. Anna, for a seven-year-old, didn't say anything. I don't want them to get mad at her out of the mouth of babes. I honestly think whatever...
That's unfortunately epidemic.
Whatever group this is...
In religious culture.
It is. And it's even... What I loved about this article, it's by people trying to do the right thing get sucked into this psychological process we call conformity. And that conformity... And I've always wondered how these, you know... How popular movie stars become such, I'm trying to think of a word here without using the one I want to.
Bankers.
What?
Bankers.
No, it's not the word I was looking for. How they become such pompous, disgusting
individuals. They're just conforming to the images of those around them for
them. Well, it's not only the celebrity thing, but it's that whole thing they talk about a bit by getting your sycophants, which I think is a great name. You get people around you who tell you, you're the dude. You should have everything. You should get everything that you want. People are scum. You and to get along with people who want that stuff from your life, you end up actually believing you're conforming. Doing the right thing. When you set yourself up above other people in a horrible way. And I thought, you know, this makes sense to me.
Yes.
The home field advantage. And if you want to read the article, I'll link it. Link a Sports Illustrated article. That'll be fun. but it's a wonderful article. If you look at it between, this is the danger. And even people who get on this journey with us, the almost I hear from it, I need to find like-minded people. And I'm going, maybe you don't.
No, that doesn't necessarily bring growth.
I understand like-hearted people, but if you just gravitate to like-minded people, you become this ingrown sense of we're the best, we're superior, we're right because we preach to the choir.
But then your own thoughts are not challenged and, I think, debated to a place of deeper truth.
Yeah, and there's no diversity in your life. The whole body image that Paul uses about the church. Eyes sense the world differently than ears do and differently than hands do. And if you're not part of a greater conversation, even with people who don't see it exactly the way you do, then you're just hanging around with eyeballs. And in the end of the day, eyeballs are going to see something, but they're not going to get it. They're not going to understand it. And just that whole risk of conformity and the desire, which I think goes back to shame and approval needs.
Yeah.
The whole desire to fit into the crowd, to belong, to, you know, become something other than I am to please the people around me. And that, you know, I call that conformity.
Oh! Wow. What a eureka.
Yeah.
Be not conformed to the image of this world, rather be transformed. How? By the renewing of your mind. So honestly, how does that happen? How do you not be a zebra and just go along with the herd?
You got to be a nonconformist. You got to be the yellow tulip in the field of red tulips.
Oh, there you go. I call that strange.
That's why people ask me, how'd you become a Green Bay Packer fan? You've lived in California all your life. And I'm going,
I just always felt like a cheesehead.
I thought the G was for God. That's what I thought. No, I actually think it was part of that nonconform. Everybody else around me was 49er fans. What's the fun of that? Might as well root for somebody else.
There you go.
But the idea of being a bit of a nonconformist, not finding your approval in the agreements of others. And I think this is a big danger for people like me and like you have been. You don't do a lot of this now.
You got the finger pointing.
I do, in a loving way.
Oh, thank you.
A treadable, tender way.
Thank you.
It's just for emphasis.
I feel it, brother.
I knew you would. But the idea, when I stand in front of a crowd, and I'm sure you've done this too, you know exactly the phraseology to use to whip a crowd into a frenzy. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll be honest. I don't know that I was ever profoundly conscious of ability.
That's where I'm not well. Because I was. I come to a point in the sermon going, if I say this now, this place will blow up. In a wonderful way. And I wouldn't do it. I mean, I just consciously said, not going to manipulate people that way.
Well, see, that's why your services work.
That's why no one can. And I got kicked out. No, but even, speaking of that house church
bunch. No, I know. I understand what you're saying. I think the real difficulty in all of what's going on is, how do I not? If that is just like, there's no spiritual truth trying to be shouted out here. That's right. Just saying, what is that advantage? What's going on? That's just saying that we oftentimes are very much influenced by the environment we find ourselves in, be it religious, be it not.
Yep.
Well, how do you, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to be a nonconformist, because that could be equally reactionary.
It could.
You know?
That's all more fun.
Okay. Well, there you go. And that's the key, after
it's
all.
It's all about fun.
It's all about fun. At the end of the day, how do you not succumb to those things?
That's the challenge.
That's why I asked.
And what I call that is non-conformity.
Well, no, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Why? So that you might discern the will of God. I think that's the whole deal. You have to be aware the world, whether it's clear around you or not, is trying to conform you in some way, shape, or form. I've got to be aware of that.
Oh, well, shocker. I call that obvious.
No, I call that advertising.
Okay, there you go. Very nice. Advertising conformity. Ah!
No, it is. You drink the wrong beer, you drive the wrong car, you wear the wrong skirt, you're just a creep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a guy.
Especially the skirt. Stay with me here.
All right. Just seeing you on the hood of a Corvette, that's not working for me.
No, I was just trying to make it not so gender specific to be masculine. Okay. That's all. We need a woman in here for peace.
We have Abby.
And we'll take applications. Well, Abby's sleeping, so she's upside down, as a matter of fact.
There you go. She's not conforming.
But before we get there, I want to explore what you're saying, but I just want to read this, because going back to how this happens. It said, even in the NFL, in which most games are sold out, the home-away discrepancies in penalties and turnovers increase with crowd size.
Wow.
So the whole movement thing, got to make a movement, you're part of something bigger than yourself. All of that is meant to seduce us into a conformity. That's why I always...
Everybody's doing it.
That's why I react to movements. That's exactly, I think, why... And I don't mean those movements. I mean people...
Sorry.
In virtually every sport, the home field advantage is significantly larger when the crowd is bigger. And then in the end, referee bias explains not only the home field advantage, but also why the home team's success rate hasn't changed in more than a century. Those sports have altered the rules in all kinds of ways. The official role in the game hasn't changed, but the umpire still calls balls and strikes, penalties, whatever. And umpires aren't consciously favoring the home team. They're doing what they believe is right. But that's how the world brings people into shaping it in its image, is that whole idea of, we're going to conform you to the crowd, going along with the crowd. Everybody else is doing it. And what amazes me is religion not only has been immune from that, it's been better at it than anything the world does. Down to, my 7-year-old can't play with your 7-year-old because you don't come to our church anymore, which is obscene. But people do it thinking, you know, they're a danger and we shouldn't let you, and... I think what you're talking about,
it's all fear-based, and I don't think it's recognized as such.
And we call that fear.
See, I don't think people recognize, oh, I'm living my life in reaction to what I fear. But I think so much of it, I mean, Kelly made the comment, she was at, like, you know, some little mom's prayer thing, and she came away just totally disgusted and frustrated, because everything coming out of everyone's mouth is fear-oriented.
And if you were part of that thing and you're listening to this... Kelly loves you anyway.
She was praying for you.
I'm sorry.
No, that's what drives me nuts about religious people. I hear exactly what Kelly said.
But it is. It's all fear-based, and it's like as if God doesn't exist anywhere and is inactive and not a part of what's going on. And you're just going like, wait a minute, we don't live there. Yeah. We don't.
We used to.
No, I used to. Maybe I did. I look at all this and just like, okay, if that's what's going on, that's the mold that's trying to press me into the way it thinks. Well, I don't want to live that way. I want to run counter to that culture. And it's like, how do you do that when if you're just going like basic statistics, it's like, well, the larger the crowd, the greater the conformity and the greater the pressure is exerted. And it's, you know, statistically evidenced in our sports. It's like, okay, well, it's evidenced in all of life.
Yeah.
And think of the present culture right now, and it's lost quite a bit of its traditional moorings. And the pressure on young emerging kids now, you're just going like, this
emerging
is insane.
Kids.
Well, yeah,
I was thinking of the movement.
Yeah, you're having another reaction to a movement.
We call that emergent.
Yeah. But I think kids growing up, it's like you look at that and their whole decisions are based in I don't want to get embarrassed. I don't want to be different than. I don't want to stick out. And you're just going like, golly, how do you navigate there? And it's like what I see in Romans 12, and it says, hey, don't be conformed to the image of the world, but rather be transformed by the renewing. That's active, present tense, ongoing. Why? So that you might be able to discern what the will of God is.
And it's an organic process. It's the metamorphosis. It's the caterpillar becoming a butterfly. The idea of conformity is whatever exerts the most pressure on you, whether it's your fears, or I think the other side of the fear thing, same thing, is your approval needs. It's the negative side of Brené Brown's presentation on vulnerability. We talked about a couple of podcasts ago.
Okay.
Finally found out how to pronounce her name. It's not Breen,
nice.
It's Brené. It's Brené
nice.
With a B, which some parent had to be creative. You know how parents are. In any case, the desire for connectedness, it's why we're here, she said. Well, if your desire for connectedness is about becoming what I'm not to please the crowd I'm with, that's the negative side of that desire for connectedness. But that's what our culture preys on, to its advertising, to its, you know, peer group pressure, to religious institutions. Conform,
and it's relentless.
Conform and you're loved. Don't conform and you're not only just marginalized, you're often despised. We were with a couple this week that just looked at us and said, you know, for 4 years, we've had nobody affirm the conversation that my wife and I are having together. We've been all alone. And sad? Yeah. On the other hand, I admire the courage of that. I admire the courage of a couple that says something we knew to be true in our heart. And even though we could find no one else around us to applaud for us, we continued to walk that way.
Well, back to Romans 12, it puts it in the context that be a living sacrifice, and that this is your reasonable act of worship. I think it goes to the whole gaze of your soul. If this is all acceptance and the need for belonging stuff, and I'm taking my cues from the culture, good luck not being swept along that tide. I mean, there's statistics right there. It's like, you know what? You're going to be swept along it. And even when you think that's not happening, or they're not exerting their influence, they are. We are.
I mean, the conformity thing is inside, isn't it? So whether the outside are intentionally doing it or not, or whether we're intentionally responding or not, the self need is internal.
Yes.
I want to be loved. I want to be affirmed. I want to fit in. I want to belong.
In that vacuum, if I don't find my gaze of the soul first looking at God, I mean, that's where it's like, you know, if he is the one that it is my desire to be pleasing to, and he is able, well able, to show me that love, that's what makes you immune to all the other stuff. That's what gives you the power to, quote, resist that irresistible influence of the herd. And it's like, no, when you know who you are and you know whose you are, and there's actual affection and satisfaction in that, that's what enables you to not then just go along. And you don't have to do it like, I'm going to dig in my heels and there's a fight. It's more like, no, it doesn't have the same pull.
That's the key.
The vacuum inside is being filled with a substance called him.
I think that's the key. I don't think it makes you a better resistor. Like, I'm stronger now to resist this. It's, you don't care anymore. The same draw to have your approval. At the end of Galatians chapter 2, where Paul is saying, you know, I'm no longer driven to impress you, and I'm no longer driven to impress God. When you can come to that, when your journey in him brings you to that place, then you really discover this freedom from the conformity of others. And even when people are really trying to put the squeeze on you to do what you think they think is best for you, it's kind of like, well, gee, thanks for your input, but, you know, don't need it. That is an incredible freedom to live in.
Well, it also enables you to figure out what's true. Because I think, you know, we talked about opinions and the difference between that and knowledge. The whole conformity thing shapes my interpretation of what must then be true. It's like, just because they're hurt? All went, that now means that's true? No, not necessarily. Just because they all think, well, no, yeah, that's all right. It's like, what if it's not? And how would you know? Because I do think that so much, you can see this all in politics. It's like, it's now according to popular opinion those will confirm my convictions and beliefs. And it's like, what?
And that ain't working.
No.
Well, it's being used on both sides to keep the country polarized. There's this group that will affirm those beliefs. There's this side that affirms those beliefs. And it's whatever group you choose to have your beliefs.
And it seems to be nothing more truly than galvanized opinions. As opposed to, hey, could we actually look at this and find a solution to reality here? It's like, no.
No, it's not possible anymore. Sorry. We're done with that.
But I look at all that. It's like, here's the necessity. If I don't find those needs inside me truly satisfied in God, I got a snowball's chance of figuring out what's true. Because I'm going to be pulled around by those needs being met somehow in some group dynamic.
Unseen. And that's, I think, the point of the article was, this is not anybody's overt attempt at anything. This is a crowd rooting for its team, an official trying to do the best job to call a fair game.
But being influenced.
And none of this is going on by anybody's intent. It's just when you're wired.
Just is.
To want the approval of men. And we all are wired that way as a compensation, I think, for the shame of the fall. Whether it's boasting or whether it's a little pity party, I'm worthless piece of worm in the dirt and all that. No matter what it takes, it's that same thing. We have deemed ourselves worth less, or sin has deemed us worth less. And so we try to find the crowd to like us. We try to find a group to belong to that gives me a sense of security because of the conformity. It's like the cows moving. I'm in the herd, and all of a sudden the herd's all moved over the hillside, and suddenly I'm standing there all alone, and going, you know, the pastor seems fine here, but I am all alone, and I think I'm going to go back to the crowd. And partly, you know, I guess if you're a wild buffalo in Africa, being out alone is not good because the lion is going to come and eat you. And the herd is a better shot because the lion comes, he's only going to get one of you and less chance of it being you if you're running with a herd. So I maybe that's where some of the instinct comes from. But you're right. Until Jesus settles us in our being loved by him and the Father, where other people's opinions of us no longer carry weight, then that's a big step into the kind of freedom God wants us to have. And to always be aware that I can, in my flesh, be easily influenced by a herd mentality and easily influenced by a movement, in-day movement, that everybody who's really belonging to Jesus is going to be part of this or part of that. I'm going to be influenced by those things if I don't know I'm loved and if I'm not living in that wider space.
Well, I think it's in Zechariah. It talks about him quieting us in his love. And it's like the imagery is almost motherly in terms of a little infant of, we're all fussy, we're anxious, we're worried, and it really is God's enveloping love that can bring me to that place of quiet settledness that I can start figuring out what reality is again. And I think that's not just neat. It's like, that's necessary if I'm going to navigate well.
Yeah.
And it's like when I'm taking that from other people, or I'm taking that from revered religious leaders. I mean, if anybody other than Jesus is on that throne, well, God help you. You know? I mean, that's danger.
Oh, if your best friend's on that throne, if your religious group is your prayer
spouse,
group's on that throne, yeah.
Whoever
your house
that
church
is
on that throne, yeah.
It's like they will be that conforming influence. Your understanding of truth will be conformed to what they approve of.
Yeah.
And it's like that's where you get sincere, well-intentioned people who seem to be brought down other paths, or like, why, you know, when all of a sudden the light comes on, I go, how did I get here? It's like, well, that's how. That whole mechanism, that need for approval, that desire to belong, that sense of, unless that is found and satisfied in God, I don't think you're going to navigate on this planet very effectively.
And then when it is, I think you have the freedom to live differently in the world and resist the tools of conformity with other people to get what you want.
Well, the lure of it isn't even as loud.
It ends you doing it to others.
To
completely abandon the idea that conformity is a process God uses. That my pressuring my wife, my pressuring my kids to do what I think is one. Now, you're training kids. That's a, obviously have a role there. I'm just talking about when they're older adults, pressuring people to do what you think is best for them. When you really lose that, I like the illustration. I love that Romans 12, the conformity contrasted with the metamorphosis. I use the thing about you. There's no way you can conform a caterpillar into a butterfly. And it's not that you can't try. It's not that you can't get a butterfly mold and a caterpillar and a plastic mallet and pound that caterpillar into the shape of a butterfly.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's not going to work.
And let it dry in the sun and then pull out that little butterfly and flap his little wings. And you know what? It's not a butterfly because the process of transformation doesn't prey on conformity. It's that inside out. If the inside becomes clean, the outside becomes free. And until that process, we undergo it. If it's still about things I've got to conform, there's principles and there's obedience, obligations I should do, and I should make other people do them around me for their own good. As long as you're in that mentality, you're a danger to yourself and to others. And you'll miss, I like what you're saying, you'll miss what truth is. You miss reality because it's all skewed by my need for approval or my need to use your approval to get you to do what I want.
Yeah.
Am I threatening you with, well, if you don't do this, you know, what if the world finds out this? Well, what if they do? Go ahead and tell them. I don't care. I'm not afraid of what's true. You're the liar. So go ahead. And yet how many people have said, I remember even ending our time at the fellowship I was last a part of, it was, you know, what if people hear this and what if they think that? And if you don't do this, and we're going, what if they do? And I even remember at the point I just told God, maybe I am wrong. Maybe they are right. I don't even know how to conclude. What I see in my heart, I have to follow. And I told God, if I'm wrong, if I'm the arrogant, rebellious heart they say I am, then you're going to get to show the world that I am and show me. And then I'm going to get to repent and be whole from that. But I can do no less than to follow my conscience, which I don't know that it's better than yours. I just know it's mine. And I know I've got to live inside that and then let God reveal what God needs to reveal for wholeness to come.
That's true.
And that's, I loved it. It's a great article. Man, I'm telling you, I read it and going, wow, that spurred a whole lot of thinking about how we conform people, even unwittingly, even thinking we're doing the right thing, and how unfair and dishonest and destructive it is. So, let's not do it.
Just live loved. The new Nike swoosh.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.